Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Arrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr
1993, Happy VD, a Game Buoy introduction to dating sims.
I don't want VD.
Welcome again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to a much-delayed episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
Much-delayed GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
If you follow me on social media, you likely know that I lost my voice last week. That's why our Valentine's Day episode, or as we call it, our VD episode, is now a week late.
Well, yes, now that your VD episode is taken care of.
In any event, this week we're going to be taking a look at that much maligned genre of game, the dating sim. So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we want to take a moment of silence as we dedicate this episode to Joystick, the popular gaming blog whom we have cited thousands of times over the years, which closed its doors earlier this month. Hopefully, everyone who is writing over there and doing great work can get employment in the industry expediently. For now, though, let's get started with our regular slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy McWaggy, you want to kick us off?
So the Square Enix title that had been teased as Project Code Z has been revealed as Mina de Spelunker Z. This is going to be the PS4 exclusive title from Square Enix and Tozai Games. It was revealed at the Tokaigi 2015 event on a Nico Nico livestream.
For those of you, of course, who don't know a lot about Japanese, you could probably think of this game in English as being like, everybody's Spelunker!
Right, and it is a new Spelunker game.
Alright, well, this next one comes from the vault of things I never thought I'd be talking about. The 2D fighting game by Sega, Dengeki Bunko Fighting Climax, is going to be releasing in North America on PlayStation 3 and Vita this summer.
That's exciting.
It is. I imported this game, I think it's a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to more people getting a chance to play it.
I look forward to that too.
There was also recently an update to Super Smash Bros. For Wii U that added several levels as playable under the game's 8-player mode.
Five Nights at Freddy's 3 is now on Steam Greenlight. So if you want to have more adventures at Freddy's and try to not get murdered by animatronics, then you should go and greenlight it.
You better vote. We also have word here from Arc System Works that Japanese arcade cabinets of Guilty Gear Xrd Sign are going to be patched to include the current and any upcoming DLC and console exclusive player characters. That currently includes Sin Kisuke, Leo Whitefang, and Elephant Valentine.
Jeff Keighley has confirmed that the Game Awards will come back in 2015. This was announced at PAX Prime, and we will get more info from Jeff Keighley in the spring.
Excellent. We have another new character announced for Killer Instinct. This character is Omen. We talked previously about the announcement of Omen, but perhaps more excitedly is that at the end of the Omen reveal trailer, we got a tease for the next character, who is going to be called Golem. Golem is apparently going to be an all-new character who is, you know, like a big rock man. So that's typically pretty exciting. Big fans of Killer Instinct here in studio. Looking forward to seeing
how this
turns out.
A big rock man like Mega Mega?
Dun 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 dun.
Dragon Age Inquisition from BioWare has received a special recognition award from GLAAD, also known as the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. As you know, Inquisition was the first one to feature fully gay characters. We kind of poked fun at that. But in all seriousness, you know, this game has furthered BioWare's work with including diverse characters, including trans characters and queer characters. So the GLAAD Awards, the 26th annual GLAAD Media Awards, wanted to recognize BioWare's work.
Oh man, that's great. I'm really happy to hear that. We also got word that Bravely Second now has a subtitle. You may recall that the original Bravely Default game was released in Japan as Bravely Default Flying Fairy. Bravely Second is going to be called Bravely Second End Layer. Mm. And for those of you who are thinking already about the fact that Bravely Default Flying Fairy had a bit of a trick in its name, or as it was released in North America, Where the Fairy Flies had a trick in its name, Square Enix has confirmed there is a similar trick involved in the name End Lair.
Mm.
So for those of you out there who get anagrams and like understand how to like make words out of other words, I would say start thinking about what End Lair could mean.
We had a bunch of news shared from the Persona 5 trailer and in Famitsu recently. So Atlas has really been spilling the beans. You can read all of this over at Silicon Era over on GameBuoy.org.
Yep, we will link you over at GameBuoy.org.
But suffice it to say that it sounds very exciting, and my personal favorite news is that there will be a social link-like feature.
How appropriate for this episode.
Right?
We also have word here that the upcoming release, One Piece Pirate Warriors 3, will include pre-time-skip versions of the Straw Hat Pirates characters. This is exciting for One Piece fans, and everyone else is just like, will you shut up about One Piece already? Jesus.
LOL. Speaking of Bravely Second, there will be a barter sub-scenario system, which will have you choose sides between two asterisk holders. Is that like the... Is that something in the game that I didn't get to yet?
I hope not, because asterisk is the system by which, like, asterisks are what you learn your jobs from.
Oh, okay. So, basically, you're going to be choosing between the job or the story.
Well, so basically, what's going to be happening here is that in Bravely Second, we're going to have branching storylines that will impact which asterisks or jobs you get.
Oh, okay.
So to me, that's actually really exciting. You know, common criticism of JRPGs is often, you know, that the storylines are very linear. You don't see a lot of branching pathways and, you know, alternate ways that things can be done. So Square Enix prioritizing this for Bravely Second, to me, that's something that's very exciting.
I guess I just forgot they were called asterisks.
Oh yeah, it's all good. We also have word here that Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy Curtain Call got music as downloadable content from Nier.
Nice.
This is, of course, amazing because, as anyone who listens to the show knows, I think Nier is an amazing and underrated game with incredible music. We also got more songs in Curtain Call from Chrono Trigger, Saga Frontier 2, Seiken Densetsu 3, Legend of Mana, more Final Fantasy V music, more Nier songs, songs from Romancing Saga 1 and 2, and a song from the fairly obscure SNES Squaresoft RPG, Live Alive.
That's not how that word works.
Bitch, that is how the Kana call pronounces it, so I don't care.
Hyperdimension Neptunia Rebirth 3 V-Generation is going to be coming to Vita and PlayStation TV this summer. This, of course, is the Vita game that is an updated remake of Hyperdimension Neptunia Victory, or Kamijigen Game Neptune V in Japan.
You know,
I didn't realize it was called that in Japan.
I'm really stoked about this, primarily because I'm hoping this means that we'll get Neptunia Rebirth 3V on PC. You know, we talked about how Hyperdimension Neptunia Rebirth 1 and 2 were coming to Steam. I picked up the first one about 2 weeks ago and played it and really enjoyed it on the PC. It was really great, and even though, you know, it does have some of the fan service-y moe stuff that gets under my skin, but overall, I really had a great time playing it, and now I want to play more.
So, quite a while back, we talked about the Square Enix Collective, which was their crowdfunding program for independent developers. And now they have started offering some Eidos IP to use as part of this platform. Three are currently being offered. Gex, Fear Effect, and Anachronox? Anachronox. I'm not familiar with that one. So this is exciting, and I feel like we kind of were saying that we wondered if this would be a possibility, you know?
Yeah, well, they actually had said back at the announcement of the service that they'd be doing this, but to me, that had seemed at the time like a dubious claim, but I am obviously eating my hat now. Unfortunately, yummy, like jerky. Unfortunately, this means we probably are not going to be seeing any games from Square Enix proper in the Gex, Fear Effects, or Anachronox franchises, but who knows, maybe we'll see a really great pitch for a new Gex, and the next thing you know, we'll all be cracking wise as cute little geckos.
Aww. Pokken Tournament is going to be launching this summer in Japan. You will be playing as some iconic Pokemon and powering yourselves up to go into Resonance mode. Resonance Burst mode. So I don't know if this is like another sort of Mega Evolution thing. Who knows?
It, to me, sounds like an EX Burst type situation in a fighting game where, you know, you enter your super mode for a set amount of time. Not entirely dissimilar to, like, X-Factor mode in MVC3 or something.
Yeah. There's also some cute support Pokemon that you can choose between at the beginning. An example showed a Dedenne and a Fennekin to choose from, and they will have unique moves and help you out in battle.
The recently announced Vita version of Sayonara Umihara Kawase is going to include the original Super Famicom game in the same package.
Wow.
For those of you here in North America who have no idea what I'm talking about, you might be more familiar with this game under the North American title,
Yumi's Odd Odyssey.
Yumi's Odd Odyssey. Believe it. We didn't even plan that out. Some very exciting news comes in the form of Hasbro's announcement that they will be launching a Yo-Kai Watch toy line in 2016. This, of course, is based on the very popular Level 5 game franchise that has spawned anime and other things. And from what I understand, is actually like rivals Pokemon in popularity in Japan. So watch out for those Yo-Kai Watch toys, because they look pretty cute. I mean, the Yo-Kai Watch characters do. I haven't seen the toys yet, but I'm sure they will be cute.
And for our last two follow-ups, we take a look at a recent press conference done by Nippon Ichi Software America, where they announced that they were going to be bringing a couple of games over to North America. Most interestingly to me is the announcement of the long in gestation Rodea the Sky Soldier.
Yes.
This was, of course, the Probe and Kadokawa Shoten Games collaboration title that was recently saved from development hell.
Right.
Which we've talked about quite a few times here on the show. This is going to be releasing for the Wii U and 3DS, so they're bringing both versions over to North America and Europe this fall. Nippon Ichi Software America doesn't often publish on the Wii U platform.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually really exciting news on a lot of levels here.
I thought you were going to jump on this other one, which I want to take.
Then you can.
So Nippon Ichi Software America will also be bringing over the next installment in the Danganronpa series. This is Danganronpa, another episode, Ultra Despair Girls. It takes place between the original Danganronpa Trigger Happy Havoc and Danganronpa 2 Goodbye Despair. So I guess it's like an interquel.
Yeah, and this, rather than being the traditional visual novel style game that the Danganronpa series is sort of famous for, this is the one that has like third-person shooter elements.
Fun.
Yeah. We also, just real quick here, have a little slate of release dates that have been announced since our last episode. Xenoblade Chronicles 3D will be launching in North America on April 10th.
For the new Nintendo 3DS.
For the new Nintendo 3DS. Persona 4 Dancing All Night will be releasing in Japan on June 25th. Story of Seasons, the English version of Bokujo Monogatari Tsunagaru Shintenshi, will be available in North America on March 31st. This is, of course, the newest installment in the franchise you're probably familiar with as Harvest Moon.
In very appropriate news for this episode, Just USA, is that the way you pronounce them?
That's always how I've pronounced it.
Have announced that they will be releasing their localized version of the adult visual novel Hanachirasu on March 10th.
And last, but hecka definitely not least, we finally have a North American release date for Devil Survivor 2 Record Breaker. This is one I've been waiting literally years for.
Yeah, I was going to say, we didn't think this was going to happen for a minute.
And it's finally going to be releasing in North America for the 3DS on May 5th. With all of this having been done and said, let's move over to some
news. 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 Oh my god, news.
Oh my god, news. This first bit of news is one that I am so intensely excited to talk about. Holy shit. West One Bit Entertainment co-founder Ryuichi Nishizawa has announced that he has partnered with indie developer Game Atelier to convert their previously announced game Flying Hamster 2 into what is now going to be a spiritual successor to the Monster World series. The new game is going to be called Monster Boy and the Wizard of Booze.
Ah!
This is going to be a side-scrolling action-adventure game in the vein of the Monster World series. The art that we have seen for the game so far looks like a Monster World game, and, you know, it definitely sounds like, this is going to be as close to a real Monster World game as we can get, aside from the lack of the actual name Monster World, which Nishizawa-san himself has specifically said the only reason this isn't going to be a Monster World game is because Sega still owns that trademark. But otherwise, in terms of design and game intent, it's going to be a Monster World game.
Nice.
We also have word here that LEGO Jurassic World and LEGO Marvel's Avengers are going to be the next two big LEGO video games. Look forward to both of these around the time that their respective movies open in the next year.
Japanese smartphone game developer Mobcast has acquired Luminous and Medios properties from Q Entertainment. So they are working on a new Luminous game for iOS and Android. The good news is that it will be a collaboration with Tetsuya Mizuguchi-san, so it's not like he is not involved. He, of course, is now at Enhance Games in California.
Excellent. Anita Sarkeesian has announced that she's going to be doing two new web series in 2015 while continuing to produce the feminist frequency Tropes versus Women in Games. These two new productions are going to be a video series examining the representations of men and masculinity in video games, and a mini-series presenting examples of positive female characters in video games. While no further details on either series have yet been announced, something that I find very interesting and fascinating is that this is Anita Sarkeesian really responding to her most vocal opponents with just more data. Like, just the exact kind of data that angry misogynistic fools are, you know, oh, well, how come you don't do a video on men? How come you don't do a video about women that are done right? Well, no, now she's gonna do exactly that. So,
yeah.
I appreciate people who don't see eye to eye with her. I always, always, always encourage people to have honest and authentic communication about differences of opinion. To me, this is a really great way to respond to criticisms, and I really look forward to seeing these videos and to seeing additional Tropes versus Women in games.
And, you know, my stance is, and I, you know, Anita Sarkeesian has said this, that just because you offer criticism about something, whether it's video games or literature or cinema or whatsoever, doesn't mean that you can't enjoy them or that you are horrible if you are including those tropes. It's just to encourage people to be aware and, like, you know, for developers to consider other possibilities.
Well, that takes me back to a Tumblr I saw that was called Your Fave is Problematic, and it was just a list of basically, like, every big celeb and every big, like, band or musician and, like, when they have done or said something that is considered problematic. And the thing that really occurs then is everyone has done something problematic at some point. You know, so these, the quote-unquote social justice warriors, and make no mistake, I certainly count myself among them, for those of you who find yourself opposed to such things, we're not saying, oh, lose your video games, we hate your video games. We are saying, hey, just be aware. It's okay to acknowledge that things can get better and still enjoy the things we currently have. I mean, shit, I love all kinds of problematic shit, but I recognize it's problematic.
In some lighter news, there's going to be a new Mean Girls game, and it's going to be a tower defense game. It includes your favorites like the Plastics, as well as Damien, Aaron, Janice, and Kevin, and involves, you know, recruiting cliques and such.
Every straight person who listens to this is like, who are all of those people? And all of the gay people
and
who
we're
listen
just like,
are like, Kevin Napor, yeah!
They're like, no, they're more like, Kevin G!
Well played.
And I'm just like, would you like us to assign somebody to better your muffin?
Capcom has announced Dragon's Dogma...
You can't see with us!
Dragon's Dogma Online. This is going to be an online version of the somewhat newer franchise under their roof, Dragon's Dogma. It's going to be a free-to-play online game for PS4, PS3, and PC. It's due for release in Japan this year, and Capcom has said there is not currently plans to release Dragon's Dogma Online in the West, but they are But they did later state they are looking into it, they just don't currently have anything they can talk about.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've seen a lot of just instant negativity online, which, surprise, surprise, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, at some point someday, maybe we'll get this over here.
Maybe.
I'm going to remain hopeful.
In a recent in a recent issue of Famitsu magazine, Masaya Games has announced a new Langrisser title for Nintendo 3DS. For those who aren't familiar with that series, you might be familiar with its spiritual successor, Groundlancer. The new Langrisser series will take place in a world where most of the land has been flooded by water, and a young man with the sacred sword Excalibur will be looking to reunite with a girl he's been separated from since childhood.
Okay.
There appear to be some steampunk elements, which I understand to be not typical of past Langrisser games.
Can we talk about the fact that Langrisser is German for lung ripper?
Ooh.
Yeah, I have never really gotten into the Langrisser games, although I did like several Groutlancer games.
Yeah.
But I've always wanted to get into Langrisser because fucking lung ripper, bro.
Right? Well, and now's your chance. I mean, this is the first one in 15 years, so I think, you know, a lot of us probably never really were too aware or whatever.
In news, I'm super excited about...
I was going to say it too, but take it.
We have word that Nintendo is bringing back their popular Iwata Asks series of interviews. And the first new Iwata Asks is for The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask 3D.
It's so good.
It's so good. We're gonna have a link to you for this over at GameBuie.org.
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 GameBuie.org. GameBuie.org. Capcom has announced an arcade game based on the very popular anime series Attack on Titan.
Indeed, this was announced at the recent Japan Amusement Expo 2015.
That sounds like a fun thing to go to.
Right? We don't yet have a whole lot of news about what the game is going to play like, but I would expect it to be something not entirely dissimilar to Namco Bandai's Gundam Versus series.
I thought they were Bandai Namco now.
Whatever. Which, if you look at the earliest iterations of the Gundam Versus series, they were actually collaborative efforts with Capcom in the first place. So that's definitely where I expect this to go, though, you know, I would certainly love to be wrong and have it be a 2D fighting game.
Hey.
It just seems really unlikely.
And I guess at least you didn't say Bamco Nandai this time.
We also got word that Lord of Magna, Maiden Heaven, is going to be localized in North America this spring, courtesy of XSEED Games. We also got word that Cave's next mobile shooter, Maho Otome, will be released in Japan for iOS and Android on April 16th. We also have a little bit of a weird kerfuffle here with Square Enix in the iOS App Store, which I feel like this is the kind of thing that happens a lot. The TLDR is that they have pulled The World Ends With You solo remix from the App Store because apparently the iOS 8 update, some number of months ago now, apparently broke the game completely, and it is completely unplayable.
Wow.
Square Enix has, initially they said they were just pulling it, and then they said they were patching it. The official story now is that they are pulling it, but they do hope to have a new version that is fixed on the store available at some point. They just unfortunately don't currently have a timeline for that, and that's why they pulled it completely, because until they have at least a date for when it's going to be patched, they didn't want people buying a game that didn't work and being disappointed.
Okay.
And so it's like, this kind of sucks, but also, in the end, I guess I come down on Square Enix's side. So,
yeah,
you know, happy with that.
So, a game that I actually, honestly, was never familiar with, called Oceanhorn, Monster of Uncharted Seas, by a studio called Corn Fox and Bros.
Yeah, we've actually talked about this here on the show.
Oh,
this
have
is,
we?
Yeah, it has music by Nobuo Uematsu and Kenji Ito.
I guess what I never realized is that it is basically an homage to Wind Waker.
Oh, and, yeah, definitely.
I mean, I can see in the artwork that it's very clear. The big news is that it is being remastered from its original iOS release for PC.
Woo!
Yeah, and I guess I didn't realize or must have forgotten that it is Wind Waker-y. I mean, that looks great. I want to play that so bad.
Excellent. Go for it. You will be able to do that on March 17th.
Wow. Hopefully I won't be too drunk.
We also, oh my gosh, right? We also have word here that a whole handful of really great games were recently added as PS2 classics for the PSN network in Japan for PS3. This is King of Fighters Maximum Impact Maniacs, Neo Geo Battle Coliseum, Disaster Report, and Twinkle Star Sprites La Petite Princesse.
Which is my secret drag name.
This is most exciting to me because Twinkle Star Sprites is one of my all-time favorite games ever that most people don't know about. It is a 2D puzzle game shmup, with verses. So if that sounds amazing to you, and it should because the game is effing amazing, I would recommend that you get onto your Japanese PSN account and download this on your PlayStation 3, like, right now. If you don't have a Japanese PSN account, you can make one super easily, and I think Twinkle Star Sprites is worth it.
Nice.
We also have the announcement of the first sequel to Terraria. You may recall Terraria is the 2D Minecraft clone that I've been talking up here on the show for years now. This is not a sequel. This is not, strictly speaking, a Terraria 2, although the game had previously been referred to as such in developer logs. This is going to be Terraria Otherworld, and it's going to be based in the Terraria universe, because there is apparently Terraria lore, inside an alternate dimension overrun by an evil force. We don't yet have any details on, you know, like a release window for this game or anything, but all of the screenshots that have been shown so far look pretty advanced for what it is.
Good.
So I'd expect a release sooner rather than later.
In the latest issue of V-Jump, a new Dragon Ball fighting game has been announced. Now, of course, we're very close to Xenoverse coming out, like, probably by the time you listen to this, but this is going to be for 3DS. It's called Dragon Ball Z Extreme Butoden. It will feature over 100 characters, and it is a 2D action fighter. Some of the characters we know that will appear are, of course, Goku. He's fighting Frieza in the magazine scan, and they show Dende, Yamcha, Mr. Satan, and Dr. Brief, as well as Bulma and Chi-Chi. More details about the gameplay will be announced later, but we do know that there will be 1v1 fights and team fights.
Most important for a fighting game is that this game is being developed by Arc System Works.
Oh, you know, they're just a little studio.
There was a handful of Arc System Works Dragon Ball Z fighting games on, it was either the GBA or the original DS, so it's been some number of years, and they were pretty good, so I'm actually expecting big things from this one. We will, of course, keep you posted. Currently, the release window for Dragon Ball Z Extreme Butoden is a Japanese summer release. And last, but certainly not least, we have word here that Sony Online Entertainment has been sold off by Sony to an investment firm named Columbus Nova, who is renaming the developer Daybreak Game Studio.
Columbus Nova sounds like something in the Mass Effect series. Doesn't it, though?
It does. It really does. Unfortunately, this is the perfect point to segue into our
Doom and Gloom.
Doom and Gloom.
Daybreak, which is a game studio formerly known as Sony Online Entertainment, is laying off a number of its staff, including the face of EverQuest, Dave Georgeson. And this news came very soon, like a week after it was sold off to Columbus Nova, which is not something in the Mass Effect universe. So, you know, as we always say, we hope that everyone lands on their feet. And it's unfortunate that it came so soon after this transition, but I guess in some ways also understandable, downsizing, etc., realigning resources, etc. But it still sucks for the people involved.
Absolutely. Hopefully all of the people who have lost their jobs can find new employment quickly.
So for this next one, I'm sorry, I had to check the year again, because is this 2012 again?
It's not, but I can see why you might think that. Sega Sammy is cutting hundreds of jobs in a digital-focused restructure. More specifically, Sega Sammy has announced their new prioritization is going to be toward digital games. As a result, they're going to be laying off and cutting jobs of around 300 employees. And additionally, Sega of America is going to be relocating their office from here in San Francisco all the way down to sunny Southern California. Sega Sammy has stated they are now going to be pursuing growth in the smartphone and PC online gaming arenas.
Cool, have fun with Sonic Runners.
So, unfortunately, this is the way that the Sega side of business has been going for a few years. It's unfortunate, but, Sega pointed pretty strongly in the direction of things like the Alien franchise, which they just seem to be having a really hard time turning profitable. Even Alien Isolation, which did itself turn in respectable numbers, did not turn in profit-making numbers. Despite selling millions of units for that title, it did not turn a profit. Not entirely dissimilar to what we saw happen over at Square Enix with Tomb Raider a few years ago. Huge game, but when budgets get this large, you need to be bigger than huge if you want to turn a profit. It's very sad. And, our hearts and thoughts go out to everyone who is affected by this restructure. In similarly depressing news, Japanese RPG studio TriAce, whom, we obviously love here at GameBuoy.org, has been purchased by mobile games company Nepro Japan to be made into a mobile game studio. Like, very specifically, Nepro Japan has purchased them to make mobile games. So, TriAce, in the way that we knew them, is gone. And they're a smartphone developer now.
Look forward to that Star Ocean iOS game, I guess.
Star Ocean's an IP owned by Square Enix, so it won't even be that. It'll be like a clone.
Oh.
Boo.
Maybe we can get Star Ocean up on that collective then.
We also have word that Jamie Lays, the leader of Rovio's games division for the last several years, has departed from Rovio. Rovio, in case you're not familiar with them, because why would you be, is the developer behind the enormous cultural phenomenon that is Angry Birds.
Angry Birds.
Or maybe I should say that was Angry Birds, because let's be fair, who talks about Angry Birds in 2015, aside us?
Well, and like children. Actually, I think kids are like not even into Angry Birds anymore.
And luckily last, sadly not least, the four-player asynchronous multiplayer online game Shadow Realms that BioWare Austin was working on, that I was super, super, super excited for, has been canceled.
That sucks.
The team that was working on the game has been split up to start working on Dragon Age and start working on Mass Effect and start working on a new IP and also to work on Star Wars The Old Republic.
I guess this is the time to amp up the Star Wars,
And the tech that was behind Shadow Realms is going to be used in those other games as well. So this wasn't like a layoff situation so much as a workflow redirection. Which I guess we should take comfort in, but I'm pretty mad.
Yeah.
In any event, that is it for our sad news. It is time to have a discussion.
So let's talk about your So let's talk about your VD, Captain Spike.
Let's see. I sat alone and ate ice cream and lamented the fact that I'm not dating anyone.
See, I spent VD playing some dating sims.
Oh, fun!
Because that's the extent of my dating life.
You still did better than me, bro.
Womp.
Womp, womp.
We're not trying to be downward Debbies here.
Downward Debbies. But no, seriously, dating sims, genre of game I really like, really viewed quite negatively in North America, although perceptions are a-changing.
I would agree with that.
I think there's a really common misconception about dating sims. Specifically, I think that a lot of Western gamers in particular view dating sims and visual novels as, like, the same style of game.
Or even more so, dating sims and eroge.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we had a question of the week for this that we posted last week when we were initially going to record.
Yes.
And I think the first response was basically asking us, like, are we talking about eroge? And, you know,
it's just kind of like, not really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we may gloss over it. We are going to keep this to a light discussion. But we kind of want to do an intro to dating sims for people who, you know, now that dating sims are becoming more popular, they want to see what these games are like. I want to dispel a couple of the myths about them. But honestly, you know, dating sims are a genre of game much like platforming. If we did a discussion on platform games, we'd probably have to pare it down to, like, our 10 favorite and really talk about them. Or, you know, 10 notable ones. So that's what we've aimed to do here for you guys, is just talk real quick about the origins of the dating sim, talk about, you know, some standout titles that you can play in English today, and how, you know, this genre has impacted games that you have played and loved.
Indeed.
So, you know, I think the real core of this question, of course, is what makes a game a dating sim?
Where you're trying to find bae.
Well, I mean, you know, but by that description, does that include Super Mario Brothers? Because you're looking for bae in another castle. More specifically, you know, a dating sim is typically a specific style of game focused on, you know, like scheduling, time management.
Romancing.
Building stats corresponding to specific social skills. And, you know, sort of having character development with the player's, you know, chosen beau.
Or bae.
Or what?
I said or bae.
Beau or bae, yeah, yeah. You know, oftentimes you're going to see multiple endings in dating sims. And in fact, you know, to that degree, we've talked here on the show about, you know, how a lot of dating sims have, like, joke endings or what have you. And
right.
We've talked about how that branches into other games that aren't dating sims.
Definitely.
You know, sometimes you'll end up seeing dating sims get turn into, like, anime adaptations. Although often those are pretty funny because they have to be, like, kind of edited. You know, a lot of dating sims that do have erotic elements in particular end up getting turned into, like, really bog standard harem style anime.
Yeah.
With all of the, like, erotic sequences cut, and it's just turns into, like, a very lackluster experience.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, the TLDR here is if it feels like you're playing a game where you are specifically having to track people's feelings, you are probably playing a dating sim.
Yeah.
If it feels like you're just playing along to a pre-drawn story, then you're probably just playing a visual novel.
Yeah.
I don't really care so much per se. I'm just trying, and we are certainly going to be talking about both styles of games here, because some visual novels are dating sims.
Yeah.
I just wanted to sort of illuminate you on this.
Yeah. I think a lot of people do think that visual novel automatically equals dating sim, which is definitely not true.
Absolutely. Slaggy, you did some research for me on the origins of the dating sim, right?
Yes, and you know, kind of, it is difficult to talk about dating sims without mentioning eroge. They're kind of both considered under the umbrella in Japan of bishoujo games, and bishoujo...
You know, can I pause you for a quick second? Eroge, when we've talked about this here on the show, but for those of you who are new or are not so nerdy that you know what that is...
Erotic games.
Eroge, specifically erotic game. Continue.
So, anyways, you know, the eroge games and... Well, I guess that's like saying erotic games. Eroge and dating
erotic
sims.
Erotic games, Game Buoy games.
Ooh. Eroge and dating sims are kind of in Japan both considered under the umbrella of bishoujo games, typically. And, you know, bishoujo is beautiful woman, beautiful girl. So, really, like, the origins of the dating sim really kind of come from early eroge. In 1982, Koei put out the game Nightlife, which I believe we've mentioned before. That was for the PC-8801 computer. And, I mean, that wasn't really a dating game, but really what's considered the first kind of precursor to the dating sim was, funny enough, from Jast, that company that I was trying to be like, how do you pronounce it? And this game was called Tenshi Tachi no Gogo, which translates to Angel's Afternoon. It's an adventure game set in a Japanese high school, and you're trying to seduce the star girl of the tennis club, and so you have to get to know her friends. It does have erotic content, but it really did set a lot of precedents that we see in many types of adventure games. You know, when we talk about a lot of dating sims being visual novels. Visual novels and adventure games kind of are like kissing cousins, you could say. And Tenchi Tachi no Gogo included the, you know, anime-style artwork that we associate typically with dating sims. But like we said, you know, that doesn't mean that these types of games are exclusively dating sims. In fact, one kind of the big sister of the dating sim is often considered Girl's Garden, which was created by Sonic creator Yuji Naka. It was actually his debut work for the Sega SG-1000 console. And that involved you being a girl named Papri, and you were trying to collect flowers and give them to your boyfriend so he wouldn't leave you. So, as you see, I mean, it was not a visual novel, but involves kind of currying favor with your, you know, beau to get them to like you.
And make no mistake, I mean, Girl's Garden, it's not like an incredible game. It feels like an early Namco arcade game, in that you're just basically doing like a repetitive task over and over. Not entirely dissimilar to how I feel about something like Dig Dug, which, you know, I mean, I like a lot, but there's a lot of just like, oh, move your character over here, do a thing, move him back over here. But again, it's interesting in this context because the game was very specifically packaged as, you are doing this to make this person like you. You must return the flowers before they wilt so that he will continue to like you. In a lot of ways, though, and I think this probably holds true in particular for Western gamers, I know that the first big dating sim series that I became familiar with was the Tokimeki Memorial series.
Mm-hmm.
This was, of course, a Konami series, and the earliest games were actually written by Koji Igarashi-san of Castlevania fame. The original game was, of course, released for the PC Engine, North America. That was the TurboGrafx-16.
Yeah, Konami supported that, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
Side note.
Oh, yeah. And that was back in 1994. It did get ports in subsequent years to PlayStation, Sega Saturn, and PC in 1995, 1996, and 1997, respectively. There was a Super Famicom version in 96. Game Boy Color got two different spin-offs. There was like a Beatmania minigame in one of them. It was actually pretty cool. there was a PlayStation port. But this was in a lot of ways sort of the solidification of a lot of the tropes that I think dating sims are really known for. And something that was really cool about this game in particular was if you were dating a girl and you like left her cold because someone else caught your attention or whatever, if she started to dislike you, she would go into bomb mode where she would like start talking behind your back and like actively working to make the other girls not like you. So it became like, it has like a really interesting mechanic of, you know, a lot of us when we play dating sims, you know, we just find the character that we want to date and we just date them. We just focus on them and do stuff with them and it's cool. Tokimeki Memorial, and it's funny because it's such an early game and this sounds like a really experimental mechanic, but it very specifically required like a gameplay awareness, not just play the story along and curry favor, because you had to constantly make sure all of the girls at least liked you and not to trash you to the other girls. But, you know, this game had a lot of the tropes that the genre has come to be known for in terms of stats and building relationships and going on dates and planning out your time.
Right,
so.
And, you know, I'm not too familiar with these games. My understanding is that they've only been released in Japan, and, you know, I don't read Japanese.
Unfortunately, that is correct.
But from what I'm aware of, I mean, I think even, like, the tropes of the types of characters you can date, such as, you know, your childhood friend, like a athlete, then like a shy character, the wealthy character, like these tropes of kind of like the types of characters you date were kind of like, you know, established really in this game series.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's sort of what I was saying, you know, in a lot of ways, I, you know, unfortunately, there are some amount of ambiguity in this episode. Just by definition, we are American gamers. We are North American gamers. I can play Japanese games, but, you know, certainly I wasn't playing Japanese games 25 years ago or whatever. So, I would love to, if any of our listeners know about games before Tokimeki Memorial that really had a big impact on dating sims, I'd love to hear about them. But in all of my research on the subject, you know, playing games myself, it really seems like Tokimeki Memorial in a lot of ways is like the beginning of this genre.
My understanding is that Tokimeki Memorial is really considered the kind of the godmother of the true, you know, modern dating sim. And, you know, you were talking about, you know, making sure that you kept balance with all the girls and stuff, but, something that, I believe that the series was kind of the first to do was, have, you know, the different stats, and they're like, you know, you had to have, like, statistics management, so if you want to, depending on which girl that you want to romance, you know, you would focus on building that stat. I mean, I know that's an element that I have definitely seen in some of the ones I've played, which we'll be talking about, so I can't really speak specifically to, you know, the specific stats or something, but I mean, I know definitely the, stat management was a big part of that.
Absolutely.
Which in some ways makes it, like, almost RPG-like, which is why, which we'll talk about a little later, we've seen some RPGs go hand-in-hand with dating sims quite well.
Well, I actually want to go into that right now a little bit, because, you know, the first dating sim that I myself played was an import copy of Sakura Taisen that I got at Anime Expo. Oh, holy cats, this probably would have been 15 years ago now. It was an import Saturn game. This was, I want to say, Sakura Taisen 2, or I'm sorry, Sakura Wars, because
Sakura.
We actually have gotten to a point where Sakura Wars games have come to America to some degree. We got, I think it was like the fifth game, Sakura Taisen 5, Saraba Itoshiki Hitoyo. Sakura Wars So Long My Love. This was a PlayStation 2 and Wii game was brought to North America.
Nippon Ichi Software America.
Anyway, so Sakura Taisen is primarily, you would say, a tactics game. In the first two in particular. You know, as the series went on, it got a little bit away from being so strictly tactics. But initially it's straight up like square-based grid, units moving a certain amount of spaces, and doing certain attacks. But between battles, you had a dating sim mode, where you were interacting with the girls that you most liked, and the relationship that you formed with the pilot girls, would specifically impact how they performed in battle.
Wow, yeah.
And that really for me was, at the time in particular, an incredible mechanic. I'm going to admit this, even though it's a little bit embarrassing because I'm about to talk to about another game where this happened too. I actually found that I was getting really invested in these fake relationships with these characters. Maybe I shouldn't be acknowledging that, but to me, that's the real lore of these dating sims. It's just really fun to role play. And it's a different kind of role playing than just, you know, a Final Fantasy game where, you know, you're not really playing a role so much as you're doing complex math to overcome enemies. So, Sakura Taisen, first dating sim game I played, definitely followed the tropes of dating sims as we were just discussing them in terms of Tokimeki Memorial. There was a lot of characters who were, you know, sort of like the common tropes, the shy girl, the athletic girl, the honorable samurai girl. And, you know, you had to form relationships with them and treat them correctly if you really wanted to win the tactics parts, because, you know, if your girls did not like you and did not work with you well, you were going to lose.
And I mean, and really, like, you know, I'm sure you could have an entire discussion on, you know, dating sims being problematic in a lot of ways, but I mean, I think that the concept of Sakura Taisen is, like, actually really complex, like, you know, I mean, compared to, like, some other tactical RPGs. And then it was, wasn't the setting, like, kind of like a alternate steampunk, Tokyo, at the, like, the dawn of the 20th century?
Yeah, they've done a couple of settings. There's a Paris one. There was a 1920s New York one. And it's, you know, it's just really cool, really great series. It also had an anime OVA. We may have talked about that when we talked about our game adaptations.
I'm mostly familiar with it through its anime.
Yeah, it was actually pretty good. It was like, I want to say 6 episodes, and then there was a TV series, and I seem to recall it being pretty good.
Nice.
You know, another game around that same window I played with dating sim elements was the Japanese release of Rival Schools, United by
Fate. Right. Your beloved rival schools.
Particularly, it was the second game, not Project Justice, which it would be the third game, but the second game that never came to North America. It had a dating sim mode that because I imported this game around the same time as I imported Sakura Taisen. And I got so invested that I started skipping school to play school life mode in rival schools, which was what we all referred to the dating sim mode of the game. You created an avatar, you taught him, you know, you selected what moves he was going to use in the fighting game portions, and then you had a fully featured dating sim with all of the dating sim tropes with the characters of the game, trying to romance them, and the in-game goal was that your stats would change based on what characters you romanced in terms of, like, oh, if you romance the iron-fisted Daigo character, then you would become, like, an iron-fisted fighting style, and you could take hits better, and... So the gameplay was really impacted by your choices in dating sim, but, to me, what was sort of a bigger deal was that, you know, if you got really close to some of these characters, they would get into a romantic relationship with you.
And I remember you liked the swimmer.
My problem is I'd always make a male character and try to get Nagare, the sleeping fish, to do sex with me. And he, it wouldn't, because even though he seems coded as gay from a design standpoint, there is not gay relationships in that game. I was very sad.
Yeah, but I remember your live journal icons and
such.
Oh,
shit.
Making you rival schools live journal icons.
But I want to move forward a little bit here. I want to talk about a different game by developer Red Company. This is important because Red Company was the dev studio behind Sakura Taisen. They made a game for the PlayStation that was published in Japan in 1998 and in North America in 1999. This was Thousand Arms. And this game, again, you know, it had all of the dating sim tropes and functionalities and features from other dating sim games. And as far as I'm aware, this was the first big Japanese dating sim brought over to North America. This was a dungeon crawl role-playing game where in between dungeons, you basically would have to date women to increase your intimacy level with them in order to get additional abilities and get them to join you in your dungeon crawling and stuff. And the main character, the name of the game is Thousand Arms. He was a blacksmith. And most specifically, who you would get intimate with would impact the weapons that you could make.
Oh.
Yeah, so is it pretty cool stuff. I actually liked this game a lot. I still have my copy of it. For whatever reason, it's not on, like, PSN or anything. But, you know, I also remember it had a really cool soundtrack. It had music by Ayumi Hamasaki, which was a big deal at the time, especially when I was in, like, my biggest otaku phase, and I mean that in the bad Japanese way, not the vaguely okay American way. And so, anyway, it was a really cool game. I actually feel like if you want to try a Japanese-style role-playing, or a dating sim role-playing game, if you have access to a copy of Thousand Arms, this is probably, I would say, one of the easier ways to sort of start.
Yeah, it sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's a cool game.
And, you know, it's funny that we kind of associate this, you know, Rival Schools, of course, being a fighting game, but RPGs and tactical, you know, tactical RPGs, I'm all saying it like it's a different genre, but I mean, really, if you think of like a JRPG and a tactics game, there are... they almost are kind of different. But anyways, that's not this episode. You know, that seems to go really hand in hand with dating sims because, you know, the stat management and stuff. And so, when we think of some other types of when we think of some other examples of RPGs, including tactical RPGs, that they often have dating elements too. Or even if not necessarily romantic dating, some sort of, you know, currying favor with a, someone you're associated with. And really specifically what I'm thinking of is the Shin Megami Tensei Persona series.
Absolutely. You know, and the Shin Megami Tensei series has always, to some degree, had a more involved role-playing functionality and
right, you basically had to woo demons in the original Megami
games. Exactly. But that was really codified into Persona 3, and moving forward from there very specifically with the social links
yes
system. You know, and I don't want to focus too strongly on this because we talk about Persona so much here. We are definitely going to be doing a Persona buoy at some point.
Persona buoy.
So, but it still, it has to be mentioned. You know, you want to talk about a dating sim that most of our listeners have probably played. Persona 3 and 4 fit the bill.
Yeah, I mean, especially thinking like, oh, your social link has grown. Now your bond is more powerful with that persona.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, it's a really compelling, you know, really compelling gameplay mechanic. That's why I love Persona 3 and 4. You know, they, on top of being a great dungeon crawler, it's, you know, I arguably would, you know, I would say that as much as I love the actual battle elements, that I would be happy playing just a Persona, like, school life sim.
I'm gonna take you one further. I would be very happy to play a Persona game that was a visual novel dating sim with none of the battle elements.
Yeah, I mean, because something that, you know, when we think of Persona 3 and 4, and without turning this into Persona buoy, is that the character development is really great. And, you know, like I said, even with it, when it's not romantic love, like when you're with Brosuke in Persona 4, although he originally was intended as a possible romantic option, right?
That was the plan at some stage of development.
So, you know, still definitely, you know, the way that your conversation choices affect your friendship and, just really that impacting the RPG part of it, you know. I think it really owes a lot to these games like Sakura Taisen and Thousand Arms that really, you know, were exploring ways to meld these, dating elements, these social elements, I guess, if you will, with the, battle system.
Absolutely. And, you know, I want to talk about another Japanese game. This was a 2003 release exclusively for the Xbox. And yet it's one that I think a lot of people that have listened to this show have probably, if not really gotten into it, at least looked at. And that is the Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball series. Specifically the first game, but also the second, DOA X2. This is, of course, primarily the game known for being about the DOA girls in bikinis playing volleyball, hitting each other with foam bats, doing water jet ski stuff. But the thing is, if you really dig underneath that, the game actually has a fully developed relationship system where you are supposed to be doing these mini games with the girls, and that's like playing, you're actually like playing your dates. And between dates, giving them gifts in order to build a stronger storyline with that character, and ultimately their AI will play better with you if you make them like you. So, you know, in a lot of ways, Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball is a very pure dating sim experience, even if it isn't in the trappings of what we normally expect a dating sim to be like.
You know, one that I feel like is not brought up at all, but I consider it a dating sim, and maybe I'm just way off base here.
What's that?
Fire Emblem Awakening?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's maybe not as developed as some of the games we've talked about here, but I would absolutely say Fire Emblem Awakening has dating sim elements.
I mean,
literally a core mechanic to get girls to like you so you can have babies with them.
Right, and then also not only dating sim, but matchmaker sim, right?
Oh, right, yeah, I guess so.
I would totally play, again, as much as I love...
I love the
Fire Emblem, you know, mechanics, but I would also play Fire Emblem visual novel. And I think, you know, that's really where... you know, when we look at things like Sakura Taisen, Thousand Arms, and even, like, you know, our beloved Persona and Fire Emblem Awakening, you know, which, you know, by comparison, those two are much, much, much more popular, that the, like, romantic elements, the social elements really enhance it and, you know, have a meaningful effect on, you know, your gameplay experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, you know, character development.
Yeah, absolutely, quite. You know, I want to talk a little bit here, and, you know, we should probably start looking at working towards a conclusion to this discussion, but I do want to talk about another small handful of games first.
Yeah, definitely.
The first one I want to talk about with you, Slaggy, is Boyfriend Maker.
You're bringing up my difficult romantic past? Okay.
Why don't you tell us about Boyfriend Maker?
So, Boyfriend Maker is... something I believe I might have talked about it before. It is a smartphone app that is probably most prominent to those of you out there in Radio Land because it was removed from the App Store for a very long time. And this is due to the fact that it is a combination of like a dating sim with like, you know, it's really just, very like, casual games, Facebook game type of thing with, you know, like energy recharging. So, you know, the game element is really just about, you know, trying to romance your beau of choice or bae of choice. But what's most notable for is the fact that the chat mode, when you go on a date with your chosen boyfriend, has, its roots in, you know, Cleverbot, where you could teach Cleverbot to say dirty things and such. So basically, you know, I wouldn't really know how to explain the technical part of it, but presumably all of the chat data is stored on a central server or something because you can teach the boyfriends to say terrible things. And, this is actually, the game was put up as Boyfriend Plus and had some enhancements for iOS. I don't know if it's back on Android. But I mean, I know it's definitely on iOS. And yeah, so you basically, you know, you can kind of like lead the boyfriends on to say things, but sometimes they will just randomly say things that internet trolls have taught them to say. It's not a great game, but it's definitely good for a laugh. And, you know, the boys are definitely very, much in the, Bishonen style. They have like the tropes. There's like the writer and there's, you know, also like the artist and the musician. And I guess that's, you know, something that's kind of notable about Boyfriend Maker, Boyfriend Plus, is that a lot of the games that gamers are probably most familiar with are more based on, you know, being a male character romancing a female. But there are games out there both, you know, where you are a female character romancing male characters, and BL games, also known as boys love games, that are in the dating sim genre. But, I mean, typically when we think of dating sims, I think we think of, like, oh, dating pretty girls, LOL. And, thankfully, there have been some recent...
So before you go on the tangent that I know you're going to, because it is where we need to end up, I just want to point out, while we were having this conversation, I realized the Kim Kardashian iOS game that was huge has dating sim elements.
Ooh, and can't you be gay in it?
Yes, you can, girl.
Downloading that right now, Kim K.
Okay, continue.
Wonder if we can hang out with Kanye. Oh, who would want to do that, though?
I would.
Because I was going to just talk about, you know, two of the more recent examples that, you know, I've been spending time with, but should we talk about the other ones first, or kind of just...
Keep going, girl!
Okay, well, you know, I think what we were kind of talking about, you know, not a resurgent, but that, you know, more people are taking note of the dating sim genre, and I believe that a lot of that has to do with the recent release of Hatoful Boyfriend, which you might know more as the pigeon dating sim, which isn't entirely true, they're not all pigeons, but, you know, you play as a girl going to an all-male bird school, and so, you know, you get to know every birdie. That's actually a term in game.
I know.
And then, you know, based on your activities you choose and your conversation choices, you'll end up with the bird of your choice. So it's very, at the surface, very much a classic visual novel dating sim. But, you know, also notable that, you know, you're playing a female romancing boys. So, of course, I like anything where you're romancing boys, obviously. But, yeah, so a lot of people, I think, looked at Hatoful Boyfriend and they thought, oh, how weird, you're dating pigeons, LOL. But, I mean, at its core, it's a really good example of what the dating sim is. If you're looking for, I was gonna say if you're looking for something light, go for Hatoful Boyfriend, but I don't know if I would actually describe Hatoful Boyfriend as a light game.
Yeah.
And are actually, on this, I don't want to even spoil anything, but,
yeah.
You know, some of the birds that you romance have some kind of sad, tragic, stories, so not every ending is happy
and
by any means.
Hatoful Boyfriend is, available right now on Steam in English. For Windows, OS X, and Linux. And it's going to be receiving a PS Vita and PS4 port in the next few months.
Indeed. So, like, if you're looking for, something easily obtainable, and you're looking for something that actually has, more than meets the eye, let's just say that every birdie is not quite what they seem.
Yeah. I know they say every birdie in game, but still.
But I mean, like, just to elaborate a little more, like, you can choose between what electives you want to go to at St. Pigeonations Academy for birds. And, you know, if you choose the, like, track club, you can, win favor more with the more athletic birds. If you go to, music class, the artistic birds will like you. If you go to your math class, which I don't know why that would be an elective, but, then you're like, your professor will be fond of you. And, you know, you get to like take them out to like the summer festival and, towards the end of the game, and this isn't really a spoiler or anything, but you can choose like which type of bird seed to buy in certain birds, like different types of bird seed. And so they'll react, and you could get different endings if you maybe don't get the right bird seed.
Well, of course, because, you know, most dating sims have a mechanic where you can give gifts to girls to make them like you more. So, of course, in Had a Full Boyfriend, where you're dating birds, the gifts would be bird seed.
Indeed. And like I said, so if that sounds appealing to you, definitely check it out. Give it a chance. If this is a genre that you're not familiar with, it can seem a little slow to start, but, playing through one bird's story takes about an hour, and then, you know, in future playthroughs, you can always fast forward through the, story parts that are the same in every playthrough, which is something that you see in a lot of visual novels. But I, like I said, definitely full of surprises.
Absolutely. Why don't you talk about the other big dating sim everyone's talking about right now?
Yeah, so this one is a crowdfunded game by Obscurasoft, who is an independent developer. I believe mostly a one-woman team, but, you know, she worked with other artists and such to put this together. And this is coming out on top. And
it's gay!
It is a gay dating sim. And,
And let's be clear here. It is not just a dating sim. It is eroge.
It's eroge. And so, you know, it's
gay, eroge, hey!
Eroge! But the thing is that it's not just, porn for porn's sake. It's definitely got, the dating elements, the dialogue choices, and, you know, while there's not really an outward stat system where you have, like, numbers displayed, definitely the choices that you make will impact your friendship and the endings that you get. And this varies from things like being able to go on a trip to South America with your best buddy roommate at the end of the game, or what job you get, or even what position in the bedroom you prefer with some of the gentlemen in the game. But that said, you know, like, not only as, I think for us as, gay gamers, you know, to have an experience like this where we can play a boy dating other boys, and, you know, it's, it's not like, you know, a BL game where they're typically, like, very, like, bishonen, and nothing against that, but, you know, just something, it is Western developed with a, you know, definite homage to, you know, the BL genre, definitely, but also to, you know, like, kind of like the gay romance movies, like, romance comedies, like, Eating Out and stuff, and now everyone's like, what are you talking about? But,
Well, just think, like, gay American Pie. I don't know.
Right. What I think is really notable about it is that, you know, it does have, each of the boys you can romance has their own story, and
most of them are very well written. I was very impressed by the writing in this game. That's why, even though it's eroge as hell, I really felt like we had to talk about it, because it's a really great effort from Obscurasoft there.
Right.
I have seen some controversy, like, I think you may have mentioned previously, you know, some people feel like the game isn't representative of, like, the authentic gay experience.
True, and I mean,
The point of view of, like, the objects of romance, they are a bit homogenized.
But, yeah, I mean, like, for example, the original, as the game was in development, originally body hair and beards were not an option, so, and I think Obscurasoft definitely listened to feedback in terms of that. But yeah,
and made toggleable body hair and beard switches.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like, you know, definitely, like, in terms of body types, but I mean, definitely there's different ethnicities of men to romance. And but, you know, Captain Spike and I were talking about this when we were going to Jack in the Box earlier.
Bitch, you don't need to tell them what our fat ass is eating.
By the way, the buttery burgers, very good.
Stop.
Anyway, you know, we've been talking about like kind of like these tropes of characters, like the athlete, the shy one, and you know, I was talking about with boyfriend plus boyfriend maker. So you know, you've got the marine. You can romance your professor. You can romance the best friend.
Boyfriend maker. I think you mean coming out on top.
No, I'm saying that those some of those kind of tropes are in boyfriend maker as well, like the music.
Oh, I see.
There's a musician. You can romance coming out on top. There's, like, the athlete and all that. So that, and these kind of tie back, you know, to that original Tokimeki Memorial trope of, like, these different characters. So, you know, while I do understand and value, you know, that they're... could be even more diversity in it. I think that, on the other hand, it is definitely an homage to these tropes that we see. So, if you don't mind a little bit of, man-on-man action, and I would hope you're not turned off by gay content. I recognize not everyone would want to play a gay, erogay.
Yeah, let's be perfectly clear here. If you play Coming Out on Top, you are probably going to see some pretty graphic depictions of homosexual sex acts.
And large sex origins.
Origins.
Well, it's the origins of your...
That's the X-Men movie that got canceled, right? Wolverine sex origins. I'd watch it.
Stop me right there. Anyway.
So, but yeah, no, if you're cool with the gay sex stuff, I definitely recommend you check it out. It's a pretty fun game. I find it very pleasant.
And you know, I just have to say, that we're gonna start wrapping up now, but I've noticed in the indie community that dating sim visual novels have kind of seemed to be a genre that a lot of people are starting to explore. I know that, Tony Iroka from the Gamer X GX Corporation, I guess they're not a corporation, and Midboss Games. She has been working on a bear dating sim, kind of in the vein of How to Fool Boyfriend. I'm not sure what her progress is on that, but you know, and just that these development tools are so easily accessible that you know, anyone could make their own. So I think definitely like How to Fool Boyfriend and Coming Out on Top have kind of and, you know, like, themes like the Persona series and such have really kind of sparked people's interest in this type of game.
And, you know, I want to mention real quick, there are three series of games, you could say, that have really dabbled with a lot of these mechanics that our listeners have definitely played. Of course, you know, I'm talking about, like, the Harvest Moons. Not the initial releases, really, not the initial games, but pretty early on they started including, you know, romance elements where you
need
to lock down the YB.
We'll talk about
taking
Girls' Garden to the next level.
Well, yeah, right? You know, World of Warcraft very famously had the farm in Pandaria.
Well, I mean, that really, I felt, was an homage to Harvest Moon, definitely.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there was, you know, the whole element of having to find gifts to give the quest givers to increase your relationship status with them. So, you know, in a very real way, I do feel that there was an homage to dating sims there. But the big elephant in the room, and the one we're not really talking about too much here on the show, but it's quite obvious and quite evident, would really be the works of BioWare.
Yep.
You specifically look at the Mass Effect series, which, you know, has even been described as an alien sex simulator.
Right.
By, you know, those less scrupulous than ourselves, certainly. But it can't be denied that, you know, Mass Effect and Dragon Age more recently have really gone deep on the relationship boat, and I think for the better of the games.
Right.
Really complex dialogue trees in some instances to romance these characters. Obviously, that includes Jade Empire, which was, you know, it had bisexual elements in it, which was really incredible. The Star Wars Old Republic has dating storylines and dating sim elements. So, you know, we're just really at a point where I feel like awareness and acceptance of dating sim elements and design are really coming into their own worldwide.
Oh, man. And, you know, I haven't played Inquisition yet, so I'm not familiar with how much the dating impacts or, you know, the romance impacts, but I would love to see BioWare just fully embrace it and, you know, have these have a more impact than just, you know, story-based.
Absolutely. And just as a sidebar, can I please get a romance game with James Vega? Thanks. Jesus.
Hey.
Right? Alright, well, we have now talked for like 45 minutes about dating sims. We're probably...
And that's why we don't have dates in real life.
Right? Oh man, I cry if I wasn't laughing. Do you have anything to add, Slaggy?
No, you know, just that, like I said, I think that a lot of people are starting to, have their interests piqued for dating sims, and that it's not all porny, it's not all visual novels, so I think there's a little bit for everyone, and if, you know, if you're someone who enjoys the idea of a digital romance, and I'm not talking about, like, you know, on eHarmony or something, then, you know, you should definitely check some of these out. And, of course, if there are dating sims, and, of course, if you're familiar with any dating sims or romance games that maybe aren't on our radar, but most definitely should be, then definitely hit us up in our social links.
And let's be clear here, I am perfectly aware we did not talk about every dating sim by a long shot. Like I said, I just wanted to help you guys sort of wrap your head around this genre in case you're curious. But of course, like Slaggy said, if there's a really great one you think we'd enjoy playing, please let us know. I love checking out new games on the recommendation of our listeners.
And you like checking out nude games.
I also like talking about things that might, possibly, potentially, maybe someday occur. So let's move over to...
Rumor has it.
She really needs to put out that next record. I guess it's, what, at this point going to be called, like, 28?
I don't even know. So, there was a big kerfuffle earlier this month when the Wall Street Journal, of all places, ran a story saying that Netflix is currently working with Nintendo to develop a live-action Legend of Zelda TV series. Normally, I would say that this is hogwash, there's no way such a thing is going to occur, but I have to tell you, Netflix has recently been talking about how they're going to be expanding into Japan. Nintendo has previously stated, you know, that they do always have their eyes open on potential partners to develop these properties. There's something about this coming from the Wall Street Journal that it just sounds like this might be a real thing.
Well, you know, especially
with...
Don't get me wrong,
developing a series doesn't necessarily mean making a series. But, if nothing else, I believe that these talks have happened.
I mean, and you look at how well-received things like Orange is the New Black, House of Cards, the fourth season of Arrested Development, and how, you know, Netflix has really become this platform, I would say it's more likely that they would go with somebody like Netflix who has a proven track record of being able to put out original content like this. Oh, and wasn't BoJack Horseman also a Netflix original?
Yes, it was.
But this isn't
Horsin'
Netflix Horsin'
Around.
Bowie.
It's not Horsin' Around, Bowie.
Gosh. It should be.
It should be. Then that's the only big rumor we really have to discuss this week. So, let's move on to this week's Smash.
Are we calling it that again?
I mean, I just didn't want to do the whole thing about needing a new name for the segment, but we still do need a new name for the segment.
If you have any ideas for the name for the new segment, tweet us or email us or Facebook us.
I want to point you in the direction of a pretty great article over on Rock Paper Shotgun. This was actually a big deal. This article was called, Oh Goddess, What's the Hell's Going On?
Ah!
This is an article about Goddess, the new game by Peter Molyneux that released on iOS and Android a while back and has since then, it was kickstarted for a lot of money and has more recently been kind of abandoned. So there have been a lot of articles on this topic. I like this Rock, Paper, Shotgun one, but I'm sure if you get into this, you're going to find other articles that are going to also be interesting. And,
I was reading an update about the guy who won, what was the game? Curiosity?
Yeah.
And, like,
that ties into this story.
Right? It's like, has your life changed? No.
Yeah. So, just really interesting
stuff.
Oh,
poor Peter Molyneux. We'll have to have a micro on him at some point.
Maybe someday. Like the Cure song.
Peter Molyneux?
No, the Cure song, maybe someday.
Alright, well, maybe someday, but what's happening today, or in the recent days, is...
I said, hey, what's going on?
Well, What you been playing?
Well, you know, I've already talked about how I've been playing Hatful Boyfriend and coming out on top, and you know, that definitely
I definitely
was surprised, because those were kind of really the first real experiences I had with dating sims. So, you know, aside from, like we said, BioWare games and the Persona 3 and 4, etc. But, you know, I definitely have a newfound appreciation for the visual novel. Looking forward to exploring more. I also recently checked out the local SF Game Night in San Francisco. This is at the Folsom Street Foundry. For anyone who is a local listener, it's every Tuesday and Thursday. I'm not being paid to promote that. It's a good time. You know, what their big highlight is that they have a Smash 4 tournament that they stream, and they also do Super or Ultra Street Fighter 4, one of those, whatever the newest one is.
Ultra.
And so,
how can you not know that? We talk about that every effing day, dude.
I am not as...
No, keep going.
You're the Street Fighter
I'm trolling,
fan.
Keep going.
So anyway, I met up with some Game Buoy listeners and some friends, you know, including member of the Hunty Bunch Toopsy from the Game Bar podcast. And so, you know, it was a great time, and I played a little bit of Smash Brothers Melee with my buddy Xander, which I had not actually played in a while, so kind of going back to Melee from Smash 4 was definitely interesting. You know, it definitely still feels like a different game, so I guess I can see where the, you know, dramas between the two communities happens, but I think they're still both great. I played a little bit of Mario Kart 8, you know, always a good time, and I'm proud to say that I ended up winning the cup, because I am awesome. And then I played a little game that I know you also like, called, I'm gonna butcher the pronunciation, Nidhogg? Is that how you would say it?
I've always just said Nidhogg, I don't even know.
Nidhogg? Anyways, this is a little side-scrolling pixel art platform fighter involving two guys jousting or dueling with rapiers or whatever you would want to say. And it's really, really compelling. You know, it's very much like kind of meant, I feel, to look like almost like an old Atari game. Your character's just like a silhouetted fighter. And basically, if you kill your opponent, then you move to one side of the screen, your opponent has another direction, and, you know, basically your goal is to try to get to the end, at which point you were eaten by the victory snake.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I love Nidhogg.
And that's pretty much what I've been playing. You know, of course, here at the SS Game Buoy, we always have a little Rock Band 3 going on, so that's what I've been playing. What you been playing, Captain Spike?
Let's see. So let's get the easy stuff out of the way first. I picked up Minecraft again.
Oh.
When I moved over to my new computer that I built, which I talked about a few weeks ago, I did not move over my Minecraft world, so I've had to restart from scratch, which sucked. But, you know, I'm working on it. I only ever play in adventure mode. Like, I don't do any of, like, the non-gameplay building modes. So I like to have to build around, like, zombies and stuff. So, you know, it's coming slowly, but it's coming. I've also rolled a monk in the Season 2 version of Diablo 3.
Oh.
I find the way that Diablo 3 is changing and growing to be really compelling. This whole season mechanic is great, basically.
Can you explain that? Because I'm not too familiar with it, and maybe listeners aren't.
Basically, at the beginning of a designated season, you're given an option to opt in to the current season when you roll a new character. It has to be a new character. And that character will only be able to interact with your other characters, your stash and everything, of your other season characters for that current season. And then, from a gameplay perspective, what that means is that all of, like, the new items that are being introduced to the game, all of the new, like, abilities and stuff, are initially only available in the new current season.
Oh.
And so the idea is that as they're bringing new stuff into the game, everyone is on an even playing field as they play. So it's like an opt-in to start fresh.
Oh.
And then when the season is over, your characters from that season are then funneled into your wider account to interact with all your other characters and economy.
Wow.
So it's just really fun to be a part of. There are some visual flourishy style, like, bonuses that you get for participating in the season. But mostly I'm just enjoying it because I had been away for so long, like, so many patches and stuff have hit that, from a design standpoint in terms of abilities and what all they do, the game is very, very different than it used to be. So I'm really enjoying that, and I hope to play more of it. And last but certainly not least, I picked up a new 3DS and picked up Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate with it.
Oh yeah, you did.
So I've put in, put in like 10 hours. In fact, I got the special edition Monster Hunter 4 3DS.
Yeah, you did.
Which is awesome. You know, I said here on the show, if that ever came over here, I'd get one, and I did. I'm loving it. It's Monster Hunter as I've always known and loved it, and it is by far the most accessible Monster Hunter yet. So if you've been on the edge, like, I really want to get into Monster Hunter, but it's just too dense for me, 4U is definitely where you want to jump in.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but praise for it so far from peeps on the interwebs.
Excellent. All right, well, do you want to start up the wrap wind down?
Yes, so how appropriate for this episode that we're moving on to social links. Of course, our social links are where we share your feedback and so on, and we want to start off with the social links question of the week. This week, we're talking about that much maligned genre of game, dating sims. Have you ever played one? Have a favorite? And because we don't want to be neglecting our social networks, we want to be kind of, you know, Tokimeki Memorial about this. Let's go over to Google Plus, where Colin M. said the only dating sim I played was Sprung on the DS, but that might have been more of a visual novel than a dating sim. Also, it wasn't very good. Now, I'm not too familiar with Sprung, but it sounds like a dating sim.
Yeah, I actually kind of remember that. There was a DS launch game, right?
I believe so. It was pretty early on. I believe it was an Ubisoft game.
Yeah, that came out on December 7th, 2004.
I wasn't getting sprung on December 7th, 2004. I was getting turned up in the bad way. Cause you remember that.
What?
Let's just say that, I am so glad that Rob Roberts is still one of our hunty bunch. That was the night of your epic party?
Bitch, I had so many. Anyways!
The one where I was the hottest mess ever.
Wait, is that the one where you fell around on the floor and were writhing around, like, touching people's legs?
Yes.
Alright, so, keep going with the show.
Alright, over on the Book of Faces, which sounds like it would be like a Castlevania game.
Castlevania, Book of Faces.
Someone who I would like to see as an option in a dating sim, Daniel T, says, I always wanted to get into the Tokimeki Memorial series, but they never turned out to be my cup of tea. I recently played Coming Out on Top thanks to Slapkick's tweets about it, and oh my. Although I have been enjoying some of the stories that have been going on around all the adult content. I am also really looking forward to playing Hot to Full Boyfriend whenever it comes out on PS4. Wonderful choices. Over on the Twatiers, we got a response from Your Enzyme. And, funny enough, Your Enzyme started off saying, are we talking Eroge here? And, you know, and Captain Spike said, you know, not exclusively. And so we got some great tweets from Your Enzyme. Well, I remember playing one a long time ago that had a fan translation. I can't remember what it was. I've only played games that had dating sim elements to them. First one I remember was FF7's Golden Saucer Date. Oh my god, I totally wasn't even thinking about that. There was also another RPG for PS1 that had dating elements, if I recall correctly, Thousand Arms. I know there were others back then too. Good memory. Then finally, the only dating sim Eroge I played to completion, all romance paths, is the infamous Katala Shoujo. Yeah. I'm not familiar with that. Are you familiar with?
I'm not.
So, interesting. So, Your Enzyme, if you would like to tell us more about, Katawa Shoujo, we'd love to hear about it. And then finishes off saying, looks like no other Buoyites on Twitter have played any dating sims. So, thank you so much for your feedback. Of course,
indeed.
We got other general tweets over on the Twatier. So this is going back into the Twitter archives to the end of January and starting out with some heartwarming tweets. Emiru69 said, I was running out of podcasts to listen to, and then GameBuoy.org came to the rescue. Aww.
I'm sorry that the gap for this episode has been so long, but for what it's worth, I think we're going to be going weekly for the next few weeks.
Yeah. That Retro Code said, I need to listen to a lot of their past episodes. It's so good, and I've been busy lately.
Aww.
And then Edward Wong 4 said, pleasantly woke up to new episode of GameBuoy.org. Check out the new episode, go download it, stream it, whatever's best. Just listen. Aww.
Y'all are too kind. Thank you so much.
Happy Natto on a Friday in January said, listening to GameBuoy.org and NNT Lovefest since I've got to get down on Friday, arriving at the weekend with style. Krylo, formerly known as Cheeto16, said, I wanted a gif of this old lady singing Say No More, but couldn't find one, so I leave you with this. And it is when Liv Tyler's character from Empire Records is having a freak out.
Say no more!
No, see, this, I love that, he included that screenshot.
Yeah, I see it.
Because it's like when she's like, and your tits are gonna get wrinkled and fall to the floor.
I'm bringing Rex's lunch!
That's that part.
Was that what that one was from?
Yeah.
I thought it was when she was fighting with,
No, bitch, I've seen that movie many times.
Okay. In response to our last episode, your enzyme said, in the words of the great Slapkick, yes! And then after listening, your enzyme said, best hour and a half of my week.
Aww. You're way too kind.
In response to our desire for Space Channel 5 to come back, the Book Pirate said, yes to new Space Channel 5, no to using motion and Kinect controls.
I do kind of agree with him. I mean, I wouldn't mind that stuff being thrown in for a lark, because, you know, I mean, it can be fun, but I would not want that to be, like, a mandatory part of gameplay.
Yeah.
Options, please.
Yeah. And in response to you making a tweet about a GameBuoy.org episode on Kirby, please look forward to it. GamerFox says, yes! As in, yes, gaga. We are going to finish up with some tweets from our very favorite GameBuoy superfan. And I would hesitate to say very favorite, but this is Crystal Ideas, and we know her forever, so she GameBuoy superfan. Just finished the 2014 games episode. I do not recall hearing Transistor on there. Not Bastion, but still good IMO. And, you know,
she said Transistor as like the 311 song? But no, Transistor was a really cool game. I liked it a lot. It's just, last year was a phenomenal year for games, I felt.
And you know, that's one that I unfortunately missed out on. I don't remember.
It's a PSN, it's a PS Plus game right now, so
right,
download
I noticed
it.
That, and I just
that in Yakuza 4. Also, if you're listening to this,
I was just thinking
Jesus, download Yakuza 4.
Right? She continues, also, you two are evil. We went back to WoW. I haven't played yet. I'm trying to finish my pyramid in Minecraft. And this is just recently, so I need to make sure to log on to WoW. Good. Good. Stay there. And anyway, thank you for the social links. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we love your feedback.
We sure do.
We like your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes. We effing love Twitter. We like to tumble on Tumblr. You can plus one us on Google. We're available over on Stitcher Radio for your listening pleasure. And if you'd like to email us, you can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Everything, including our social links, our entire episode archive, and all the links to the stuffs, so you can do the thing, is on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And I believe it's time to do shoutouts, so I was going to say, do the thing, Julie, but first of all, you're not Julie. And second of all, I noticed that, like, your shoutouts and my shoutouts are imbalanced, so sorry about it, but I'm stealing some of yours.
All right, well then, I guess my first shout-out this week is going to go out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, followed with the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore. I'd be remiss not to mention Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. Plus, the Nintendo Fun Club, platformers positivity, and pop punk. Additionally, I want to point you in the direction of both X Nation, which you can find over at culturalwormhole.blogspot.com, not video game related. It's an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants, as well as Anthony's new project, Anthony, of course, being one of the hosts of X Nation, the Nintendo Love Fest podcast.
Damn it, I was going to shout out to that one.
Aha, I stole it. Of course, you should also point your attentions in the directions of Reading is Fundamental, that Slagkick's show about RuPaul's Drag Race. We have a couple of preseason episodes in the can.
And starting back up soon.
That, of course, features myself, Slaggy, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness. You also might want to take a look over at the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. And last but certainly not least, Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, why don't you take us to a game bar?
Oh, man, yeah, you wouldn't have been able to do that last week with your throat issues.
Nope.
So, Game Bar is part of the Hunty Bunch. They are the gay video game Prairie Home Companion. Also part of the Hunty Bunch is Koopa Club, and that's why I was saying the K sound. Koopa Club is an LGBT-centric, often Nintendo-centered gaming podcast. Often sassy, always engaging, and never dull. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, which is at vognetwork.com, you can listen to Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO, and Horde House, the place for all things online gaming, but never seriously. And last, but certainly not least, I would like to shout out to La Palanca Podcast, a podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español. And as everyone always, I'd like to pour out a 40 of red potion or blue potion, whatever you choose, to Zelda Reorchestrated, which is the late great project that aimed to orchestrate Zelda music in beautiful symphonic sound, and apparently makes people at the Symphony of the Goddess think of Game Buoy. With that, we want to thank you for spending your belated Valentine's Day with us, talking about dating sims and romantic game elements. We are going to be coming back at ya, or should I say right back at ya, next week with a Kirby episode to honor the recent release of Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, and the beloved franchise starring everybody's little favorite Pink Puff, and we're not talking about Jiggly.
Absolutely. All right, fellow
folks. That's G again.
Thank you for spending this lovely Saturday evening with us. We really appreciate it. We'll be back here in 7 or 8 days to talk about Kirby.
Kirby!
In the meantime, keep gaming.
Happy 35th anniversary. Is it 35th?
Keep thinking. What is 35th?
HAL Laboratories.
Oh, maybe. And until next time.
Nagare, nagasarete, ikiru jian yo.
Talking your mic for me?
Talking your mic for me.
Okay, good. Levels look good.
Levels okay, good look.
Yes.
Ahoy, babies. Ahoy, babies. And welcome to the GameBaby.org video game podcast. Ah!
Ahoy,
matey.
Sorry. You motherfucker.
There should be an episode where we're both being host. It was announced at PAX East. Prime. Dragon Age Inquisition has received a special recognition award. Dragon Age Inquisition has received a special recognition award.
Why can't I say award?
Have announced that they will be localizing. Based on. Also part of the I did not say it.
Holy shit.
Koopa Club is a Nintendo and gaming podcast.
Stop.